This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're Grant and Danny. Top of the morning to you. It's Friday. We are ready for playoff football, and we got a heck of a show planned for you. Right here on 106.7 The Fan over the next 4 hours. At 11 a.m., Dane Brugler, NFL draft expert with The Athletic, mocked Kyler Murray to the Redskins at number 15. Oh, boy.
That's spicy meatball.
Kevin Burkhart of Fox will be calling the Eagles and the Saints. He joins the show at 11:30. And one of the top chefs in Washington, D.C., and really in the country, Spike Mendelsohn. You've seen him all over all the cooking channels and cooking TV shows. He's got great spots in D.C. you've hit up, including We the Pizza and some good stuff eatery. I think it's the burger that I ate like the most.
That's his one seed. I'm going to ask him, if you don't mind. I hope this isn't uncomfortable. He had a joint on Capitol Hill called Bernays, which was steak frites. It did steak and fries.
Yeah, familiar.
Steak and fries. And it was amazing. And I loved it. It got a lot of acclaim in 2014. Michelle Obama ate there, and it was like a big deal. Everyone was excited about it. I went and I loved it. He changed it. He turned it into something else. He could do that because he's an entrepreneur, and all he does is hit homers, and he makes delicious food and places that serve delicious food. And he's great, and he's brought us so much joy. How do I get that back? How do I get Bernays back somewhere else?
Let's save that toward the end of the interview.
Can I do like in the middle?
Maybe the end. Maybe we'll ask him about the place you personally want him to bring back that he's changed at the end of the interview. But he is actually opening a new spot in Springfield.
Yes, he is.
Relevant to you and I, it's at the St. James because Spike Mendelsohn is doing like a healthy restaurant, basically, with a bunch of options for people like you and me trying to eat better in 2019.
I saw a cool write-up about it. Just creative and really smart.
Yep. And he's also a huge sports fan, so we'll talk to him about that with your playoff previews coming up in just a couple of moments as well. By the way, it was freezing today. Got into my car. Last night was worse. So windy. So terrible. Looking at the thermometer. You know what I thought about?
What's up?
How close we are to spring training.
Mm.
Last year, you and I were at spring training, and we stayed in the worst hotel in West Palm Beach.
What do you mean the worst hotel in West Palm Beach?
There were drug deals overheard taking place right outside our window, which luckily were in the parking lot of an outdoor entry motel that was connected to an IHOP. None of what I'm saying is incorrect.
Rooms were called and code words were used asking us if we wished to purchase narcotics.
Those rooms were our rooms.
They were our rooms. And I'm assuming all the rooms on the block. The resident of that room was not me. It was the giant hair that had been left in the shower that I took a picture of.
So I got an email yesterday from CK. I believe you were on this email.
I was, yes.
We are headed to spring training February 20th, so we are just over a month away from our trip. And instead of staying at that hotel for the second time in as many years, we've been booked at the gorgeous Hilton West Palm Beach.
We are like Jack Hicks. We're like the Junkies. We're like a regular radio program staying in a silly place.
I jumped on the interwebs to Google our new establishment that we'll be staying at for a few days. Apparently, it's located just 2 miles from the beach and 3 miles from Palm Beach Airport, so Dar doesn't have to drive us all over civilization. Four Diamond Hilton West Palm Beach in the ideal location. Oh, it's going to be nice.
I can't wait.
We're moving on up, baby. We're going from the worst hotel to the best hotel.
I got to be honest with you. I'm really excited for my room not to smell like an ashtray. I just can't wait.
I don't know why you would be excited about that. I'm excited to have a shower that doesn't have the last person that stayed there's hair in it. That's going to be fun.
It's a big one. I named him Edgar. He was there.
But my shower didn't have a curtain, so.
We're going to be well taken care of. And we appreciate Entercom for making that happen.
Way to go, Entercom.
We will not have to put chairs under door handles to protect ourselves from whatever's on the other side of that door.
I mean, can you imagine? Remember, because going down there last year, you had the Vomitov cocktail. Because we did a show at Navy on Friday. You had to pull over on the side of the road with just a terrible stomach shebangus. And you recovered. I got that same thing.
Oh, that's right.
On Thursday night going into Friday morning.
I'm sitting there
just with the shivers, just losing various meals into that disgusting. Oh, it was terrible.
That was right on the back end of my honeymoon. And I came back from out of the country, and I don't know what had happened, but your boy either ate something bad or had a bug. And that was a bad 24 hours. And I was taking some kind of medicine just to get through the flight.
Yeah, I think it was a bug because I had it too. I went to a what do you call it? A
like a 24 hour
walk-in medical clinic and urgent care type deal. Got the same stuff and I ate like a normal human being at like 7 o'clock that night when Dar and I had a connection coming home in Philadelphia. Terrible trip.
That was not our finest. But this year is different.
Yes, it is.
This year is better. We're in good shape. The big question is, will Bryce Harper be a National when we get to spring training? We know that Brian Dozier is going to be the starting second baseman yesterday. And Anibal Sanchez is in the rotation. And Kyle Bearclaw and Trevor Rosenthal are in the bullpen. And Yan Gomes is going to catch.
We know some things.
But we don't know about Bryce Harper yet. There's a chance, by the way, we could get an answer this weekend. We could be doing a show Monday.
This Phillies meeting is everything.
Yeah.
It depends on what they want to do. When owners get involved, egos get involved, best practices are thrown out the window, there are rumblings of huge offers. Nobody's got great dollar figures confirmed or anything. Here's what I think is going to happen. Phillies are going to put the full court press on and say, what's the best offer? Here's more.
It feels to me like there are three cars on the track. Really, that's it at this point to try to win this race. If, in fact, the reports about the Dodgers are true, and they're unwilling to give the double-digit years, 10, 12-year deal that you're hearing speculated for the other clubs, and they want to do maybe even more money, but a much shorter 4 or 5-year contract, that's not going to cut it for me. It's the Nationals with the 10 and the over 300 that they've offered. It's the Phillies, who Bob Nightingale speculated, I saw this morning, could be offering 12 years and as much as $350 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Chicago White Sox, who might have to go above and beyond everybody else. I still don't think that would be enough. I'm not really sure why Bryce Harper would want to go to a city where he plays second fiddle to the Cubs and his buddy Chris Bryant. I just have to imagine, from an ego standpoint, he wouldn't be interested. But it makes it a little bit easier to sleep, and it makes it a little bit easier on your ego
if they give you
360 or 375. If they give you more than everyone else is offering by a substantial amount, maybe you'd go there. But it seems like it's a three-team race. I don't know if I'm way off base here. Maybe I'll end up looking foolish. I can't see him doing anything other than the Phillies, the Nationals, or the Dodgers, and it just doesn't seem like LA is willing to jump into the mix.
The keys are the sweeteners, right? Because the money is all going to be relative. It might come out in the wash, right? So at the end of a 10-year deal, if you got $350 million or $360 million, you're talking about not even $1 million per year when you really break it down, right, after taxes and everything else. It's going to be the opt-outs, the option years, the control, some of the no trade or the list or the various kinds of things. You're now into the nitty-gritty. This market took a while to take shape, and Major League Baseball players, I think, are still frustrated by how slow these markets are moving because you touched on it. Pitchers and catchers report in a month. We are less than 5 weeks away, basically, for most teams getting going with next season, and there's a lot of unemployed guys, a lot of guys settling for a lot less years, a lot less money than we were kind of used to, than they were told with the last CBA, which was saying, hey, we're going to limit young guys' salaries so that we can spend on you established players. And that's not happening. So guys are looking at this with Hawkeyes.
At 10:18, we'll get into the four games this weekend in the NFL playoffs. We have to give you detailed breakdowns on all four of those games. We've got to make our predictions today. We can do it like we did last week against the spread, straight up, however you want to do it. But I do want to mention quickly that the Capitals dominated the Bruins again last night.
Now, Grant, that's just a couple in a row, right? It's like two or three that they've won?
They have beaten Boston in 14 consecutive games. Not like 14 at home or 14 there or some quirky thing or 14 when they play on Thursday or Friday. The last 14 times these two teams have played, the Capitals have won. And I'm going to try to make this make more sense for like a Wizards or a Redskins or a Nats fan who doesn't like hockey. This is a good team. Boston is going to make the playoffs as a fairly high seed. They have not had a losing season since like 05, 06 or something like that.
They have the same number of points as Pittsburgh.
Right.
They're good.
And they have been year in and year out. They've won a Stanley Cup fairly recently. So if there's a stretch where a real good team like the Capitals beats the Florida Panthers or some bottom feeder for years on end that's running through GMs and has changed ownership groups and no one comes to their arena and they might get relocated. 14 straight wins even against a team like that would be insane. And you'd say, wow, that's impressive. Those are professionals. But I get it. They're terrible. You're really good. The Bruins, in all of these seasons that the Capitals now have beaten them time after time after time after time, have been very solid. They cannot beat the Capitals. It's amazing to just have a stranglehold over a Boston team like this. And shocker, we talked yesterday. What will happen? Is Lars Eller going to try to fight Brad Marchand? Is he going to be courageous enough to drop the gloves even though he doesn't fight to get even? Will he make Tom Wilson do it? Lars Eller tried to fight Brad Marchand last night. Brad Marchand was unwilling because, well, he's Brad Marchand. He'll only fight when Lars Eller is not unsuspecting and he can jump him and beat him into submission.
What but a punk that dude is.
Lars Eller post-game last night was pretty good.
Obviously didn't want any part of it. Everybody saw.
Do you feel satisfied that you handled things the best you could?
We'd rather fought him, but can't find a guy, fight a guy that doesn't want to fight. So, I mean, everybody saw what he is. We got out of here at 2 points. We got what we wanted.
When you say we saw what he is, what do you mean?
I don't think there's a lot of integrity in this game.
Oh, I love that so much. Marchand jumps Eller, and if you didn't see it before, he was mad that Eller was celebrating when the Caps won 7-0 on opening night. So Eller leaves with a bloodied face when jumped, meaning he started throwing punches before Eller's got his gloves off ready to fight. Eller doesn't fight, oh, by the way. But last night, Eller wanted to go toe-to-toe and said, you know what? Let's go, stupid. You wanted to fight me? You wanted to beat me up and look cool when I wasn't ready? Here we go. Brad Marchand wouldn't. Now, I will say, Marchand did his act and what he should have probably, in quotes, done, in that he drew a penalty on Eller. Eller had to go to the box. Boston got a power play in a one-goal game. That's what he is. He's an annoying little gnat flea you swat at all day at a barbecue. But I love the line from Eller about his integrity. That's also who he is. He is a scumbag. He's going to basically annoy. He'll take a shot at you if he can when you're not looking. But good luck trying to fight him when you want to fight.
Yeah, he's a punk. Good player, but he's a punk. To me, I don't think you – if you do that sort of stuff and you can't play, I get why you're in the league. If you're good and you do that crap, I hate your guts. There you go. How about that? There's no reason to be that way. It's frustrating, dude.
And he is fantastic.
He's a really good player.
I hate saying that because he's my least favorite player in the NHL by far and probably in all of sports. But he is very, very good. He just, as Lars Eller said, showed no integrity last night. Got to step up to the plate and atone for your sins, buddy. And he didn't want to do it. Next, we get into the NFL. 4 games. We'll break them down one by one in great detail. You will be smarter and ready to watch football when we are done. For Grant and Danny on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Tomorrow, 2 games in the NFL playoffs. Clear the schedule. Figure out a way to just be on the couch and responsible for doing nothing. Can you work that out or not? What's your plan for the doubleheader tomorrow, Danny?
I may, still TBD, venture to a friend's house to watch these games. We're thinking about a social outing where I am in a place that's not my home with another human being, and we watch the games.
That sounds like a miserable experience for you.
We're thinking about it.
You don't like going out to bars to watch games.
It's the worst.
So why would you do it?
Because I'm not going to a bar.
Where would you go?
A couch. Going to my friend's house.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you would watch not at your house.
Oh, yeah, which wouldn't be at my house. I could go to my friend's house.
By your wording, I saw you guys leaving his house as well.
That's not something.
In public.
That's not. Not for me.
You wouldn't consider that.
No, sir. We'll sit right down on a couch. The question then becomes, what are we going to eat? And then we get into a whole thing.
I think there's a delivery method that probably works for you guys. Let's start with the first of 4 games this weekend. Saturday at 4:35, the Colts at the Chiefs, 11-6. Indianapolis, winners of 10 of 11. The 12-4 Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City is the one seed in the AFC for the first time since 1995. Indianapolis has had Kansas City's number in the playoffs. You look at Colts-Chiefs playoffs matchups. These go back to the early, really mid-95, I'll say. Mid-90s, the last four times the Colts have played the Chiefs, they've won all four of those games. Chiefs even led the Colts at one point during that 0-4 stretch now. 38-10 under Andy Reid in his first season.
And that comeback, oh man, one for the ages.
Reid, by the way, 1-4 in the postseason in Kansas City now. The Chiefs are 0-6 at Arrowhead Stadium in the playoffs since 1993. They have had an awful stretch. They're trying to reverse those fortunes.
I counted this up yesterday. In my head, I would have gone, yeah, Kansas City kind of underachieves in the postseason. Good regular season success, right? A lot of Alex Smith, a lot of good enough to beat, you know, mediocre teams, et cetera. But when it comes to it, a lot of Marty Schottenheimer in there, that kind of stuff. I didn't realize. 0-10 in their last 10. Wild card, division, 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 wild card, division, division, wild card. Losses. These are 13-3 teams. These are 12-4 teams. These are 11-5 teams. These are good clubs. It's not just the 9-7 like the Redskins are. Hey, you lost the wild card round. Okay. This is home field. These are games at Arrowhead. These are their favored to win.
Again, they're 0-6 at Arrowhead, which is supposedly one of the hardest places in the league to play. One of
Unreal.
The loudest stadiums in the league. Everyone says, you don't want to go to Arrowhead in January. Why not?
Maybe you do.
You're 6-0 since 1993 there if you're a road team. Looking at the matchup here and delving into some of the numbers and the performers, I think one very key matchup is going to be Colts cornerback Pierre Desir against key wide receiver Tyreek Hill. Here's why I say that. There was a great piece written about Desir on NFL.com with crunching a bunch of numbers. But here's what you got to know. He shut down DeAndre Hopkins last week. Hopkins is one of the five best wideouts in football. He's a more complete, better wide receiver than Tyreek Hill. Hill's scarier and faster and makes more big catches down the field, but he's not the complete player that Hopkins is. You don't have to worry about all of the routes in the route tree like you do with DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins had just five catches against Indy, and only two of them came while Desir was covering him for most of the game. The Colts have a philosophy that is tried and true right now. These are crazy numbers. They allow 72% of passes to be completed against them. Indianapolis does. What they do is basically give you anything you want in the quick game underneath. If you want to complete a pass at the line of scrimmage, they will allow you to do so.
You're welcome to do so.
No team in the NFL allows a higher completion percentage than the 72 they did this year.
That's fascinating in this day and age.
It is. But here's why they have that plan. Because they are built with so much speed. You look at, we talked about an inside linebacker, a rookie who's made 160 tackles and has seven sacks. They run so well in their linebacking core that basically they hold those completions to 3, 4, 5 yards at a time. And they basically allow that to be a running game. Well, what do you and I talk about all the time? Points do not come from the running game. They come from chunk yardage pass plays.
Mm-hmm.
No team in the league this year was better at avoiding the big play in the passing game. You got to pick and choose a poison somewhere, right? So they say, okay, we're not going to give up anything on the back end. We're going to play secondary deep. We're going to mix coverages way off the line of scrimmage. You take the 3 to 5 yards if you want. You're going to have to run 12 and 13 plays to score.
Do it a lot.
You're not going to be able to commit penalties or you're behind the chains. If you look at the big plays they allowed, opponents tried to throw quote-unquote downfield on them on 8% of passes this year, lowest in the NFL. So that tells you everything you need to know about the scheme where it's easier to throw short on
it's
them than
nugget.
Anybody. It's harder to throw deep on them than anybody.
That takes a lot of discipline. That's hard to do because, these are human beings. God, I'm sick of them just getting 5 and 6 and 5 and 6 and 4 and completing passes. And my PFF grade probably goes down this week because I allowed a completion. And some guy in Scotland's going to knock me down a quarter of a percent. This sucks. To be able to do that and kind of say, no, this is the plan. This is the plan. This is the plan. Let teams screw it up. It's like the kind of guy that, it's like playing. This is going to be a weird dated analogy. It's like playing Michael Chang back in the day in tennis. That dude just returned everything.
That's one of your weirdest analogies ever.
That guy ran down every ball and just kept returning it, and he would let you hit the ball into the net or hit it out because you get frustrated.
Beat yourself.
You beat yourself.
The ball-controlled Alex Smith Redskins of September, October kind of thing. Pat Mahomes did lead the NFL, by the way, in completions and yards on deep throws. So this is a fascinating matchup. The Colts don't give up the big plays, and it's all the Chiefs make. Tyreek Hill, NFL best, 32 plays in 2018, big plays. 16 career touchdowns of 50 or more. By the way, how crazy is that? He's already got 16 50-plus yard touchdowns in his career in a few seasons.
I wonder how many the Redskins have had over that time as a team.
I would guess.
Do you think he beats them?
Oh, my God, yes. I was thinking five or six.
Because they're Jacksons, and then Paul Richardson had one, but that was like 40 yards.
But how long has Tyreek Hill been in the NFL, though? I mean, you don't get a lot of DeSean Jackson in that time. Like one or maybe max two of those seasons would have been DeSean Jackson time. He can't be in more than his fourth season, right?
Just looking up Tyreek Hill. Meow. He's 24.
I was thinking this was his third year.
This is his third year.
Yeah, so DeSean Jackson is not involved in any of that.
Yeah, not any of that. Yeah.
If the Redskins have more than a half dozen, I would give you $10 in that time. Maybe eight tops. Other side of the ball, when the Colts and Andrew Luck are on the field, for Kansas City, does Eric Berry play or not? I think that's a massive story.
A huge one.
The Chiefs this year didn't have him a bunch, and they gave up more touchdowns to tight ends than any team in the league. They gave up 10. Why is that a problem? No team in the league scored more touchdowns with tight ends than the Colts.
Eric Ebron 2.0.
Ebron had 11, but as a team, they had 21. I think that's even more shocking. Not that Ebron had 11, but that they had 10 other touchdowns from tight ends this year that weren't named Eric Ebron. 21 from that position?
Luck loves throwing to his tight ends.
Absolutely. When he's on the field, you don't touch him. League's lowest pressure rate and sack rate of any quarterback was of Luck, who got sacked just 18 times. You know, another kind of diametrically opposed matchup here where the Chiefs get after the quarterback effectively. Justin Houston had a 20-sack year a couple years ago. Dee Ford is an animal. And they got a guy named Chris Jones to look out for, a D-tackle, who had the number two highest successful rush rate among all D-tackles in the NFL this year.
I think also, and forgive me if I don't have this note exactly right, but didn't he have a consecutive game sack streak this year that's outrageously impressive? That's the least of the three that people know about. Chris Jones led the team. That triumvirate, by the way, at close to 40 sacks combined, that ain't nothing. Here's what happens. Kansas City gets a lead. They know you're throwing. Unleash the hands, and there they go.
But you're dealing with Quentin Nelson,
yep,
who's a mauler, who they drafted in the top 10 at Notre Dame,
that's
and you're dealing with Ryan Kelly. That was the center that McLuhan and the Redskins wanted, who went a pick before them and forced them to move back and kind of scurry, and they ended up with Josh Doctson. Those two guys are both outstanding on the interior. Colts allow 15.5 points per game since week 7. Haven't played great offenses since then, though. The Chiefs have lost 2 of 3 down the stretch, so everyone's worried about them. But if you look at the last three teams they lost to, though, or at least played, I should say, in that stretch where they lost 2 of 3, the Ravens took them to overtime, and then the Chargers and the Seahawks, those are all playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
Those losses were by a combined 5 points. It's not like they were playing terrible. They were playing great teams, and they were playing close games. So maybe a little bit too much is made out of them having met their demise already. That's your Chiefs-Colts preview. Other game on Saturday is Cowboys-Rams. We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
You know, being into year two, last year was a great year for us, being able to win the division. Very fortunate to be able to do that again. But I think there's a confidence that's been earned, where there's an expectation of, we have a lot of respect for the Dallas Cowboys, but we expect to win this game. And we know it's going to take a great effort, but we're going in with the mindset and the mentality that we expect to win. I think that confidence is something that's been earned every day by our players. And then we got to go out and prove it on Saturday night against a great opponent.
Sean McVay, second year, second division title, second playoff appearance as the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams. Looking for a different result than his first trip to the postseason. The Rams initially installed as 7-point favorites. That line hasn't moved at all. So you got LA -7. The total in this game has moved in some places a full point, most places just a half of a point. So you're looking at 49.5. The expectation is not only that it'll be close, but both teams will be around the mid-20s in points. But the Rams are a 7-point favorite. This is a Los Angeles team that at the end of the year was just kind of treading water, trying to get to the playoffs. Todd Gurley has not played since week 15 when he injured his knee. There's some question after not seeing him the last 2 weeks of the year, plus a bye at 3 weeks to rest it. Will he be 100%? Is he going to be his maximum version of himself right away? Will it take him a series or two to get back into the flow? On the other side of the ball, you've got the leading rusher in the NFL, Ezekiel Elliott. Probably the two best running backs in the league on the field in the same game. And the Cowboys' offense has completely changed since these two teams played in 2017, Danny. At that time, the Rams won 35-30 in a shootout. But Dallas, with Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith healthy and now having come all the way back from his terrible injury at Notre Dame, this is as fast and as complete a defense as there is left in the playoffs. And on the other side of the ball, they added a playmaker, so they've got some quick strike ability with Amari Cooper's speed.
Just if you sit on Zeke Elliott, and you have to, you're in danger now because Cooper can do something special with the ball. Run after the catch, go deep, etc. The game that I circle for the recipe, if I'm a Cowboys fan, it means I'm a terrible person, by the way. But if I circle a game, I look at New Orleans. Now, granted, it was at home. It was at Dallas. They took an objectively great offense that was better this year than Kansas City, better even than the Rams. The New Orleans Saints had the best offense in the NFL until week number 13 at Dallas. They lost 13-10. What Dallas did defensively that game was their coming out party. It was their debutante ball. It was their announcing their presidential candidacy. It was beyond impressive. It was ridiculous. New Orleans could not do anything in that game. Sean Payton went for it on a fourth down instead of taking the points early at one point, kicking a field goal because he goes, this is my offense here. We'll be back down in the red zone. And they weren't. They suffocated the Saints. Saints run it a little bit differently than do the Rams in terms of different formations and everything's a play fake off a fake. But for the Rams, it spreads you out. We challenge you to cover every blade of grass sideline to sideline. That's what we're going to do. We're going to show you all that jet sweep action. The 1 second you don't respect it, we'll give it to Robert Woods. We'll give it to Josh Reynolds. We'll give it to Brandon Cooks, whomever, doesn't matter. And also, we've got Gurley going this way and that way. You can't deal with everything every time against them. If you guess right, you can do pretty good.
But the teams that have thrived against them have tackled really well.
You have to.
No big plays after the reception, because Sean McVay's willing to make the short and intermediate stuff his living. Where that kills you is when a guy makes a 23-yard play after the catch, or you turn the 8-9-yard throw into 14-17 all day long. And that's somewhere where the Cowboys have thrived.
You look at that Bears game quickly for the Rams. They got after Jared Goff, and they rattled him.
They
rattled
him. Yeah.
They knocked his you-know-what into the dirt. Dallas can do that. Now, they're not as good as Chicago with Khalil Mack and company.
See, I'm not sure that they can. I mean, they can rush the quarterback some, but the Bears are on such another level. I do wonder if they can harass Goff enough, because here's how the Bears did it. The Bears did it without having to blitz. It's not like they never did that night. They were sending Roquan Smith and Trevathan up the middle occasionally in the A-gap. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that was Akeem Hicks dominating at the line of scrimmage. That was Khalil Mack just working off the edge. The Cowboys blitz more. They blitz a lot, actually. One of the highest blitz-happy teams in the league. Sean McVay's had great success beating blitzes as a play caller.
Almost
both here
wants
in Washington
you to. Yeah.
And in Los Angeles. You'd agree with me, fact or fiction here. Let's play a little fact or fiction. If you stop Ezekiel Elliott, you will beat the Cowboys.
Fact.
If Ezekiel Elliott runs for a 130 and has a field day, there's a real good chance you're going to lose.
Fact.
Here's why I ask you that.
Because there's dominoes that fall from that.
Exactly.
Normally I go, I don't care about your dumb rushing yards, but it means that Dallas is on the field. It means he's getting more cracks at it. It means that
it means your offense can't be itself.
That's what it means.
But here's why I ask you that. I didn't realize this. The Rams run defense, where do you think they rank at a 32?
I would bet it's not good. I bet you they don't give a damn if you run the ball or not against them.
32nd in yards per play this year. No team in the league just lining up and trying to stop the run was worse at doing it, giving up more yards per attempt than the Rams. Nobody did. That's where I worry about this game for them. I think the Rams will win, and we'll make our predictions later today. But there's no doubt in my mind I would take the Cowboys to cover a 7-point spread, because I think the matchup is super favorable. They are going to pressure Goff some. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not to the extent of Chicago as we talk about, but they're going to put some pressure on him, which he normally struggles to deal with. The fact that you've got Amari Cooper allows you to try to get back into games when you're down 10 or 11. And that's what I always thought would be their undoing. That's, to me, why the Baltimore Ravens had no chance and everyone overrated them. You need to be able to have a multifaceted offense. If you can only run the ball, it's not good enough. Now, they can actually make some big plays in the passing game.
Normally, it is correct, statistically accurate. The smartest thing that you can do is to defer possession to the second half. That's now tried and true at this stage, because you can time it if things work out. You can have the last possession of the first half and the first possession of the second half. It's the Bill Belichick masterclass, where all of a sudden you can get two scores up before the other team touches the ball, and in real time, an offense is off the field for an hour. Normally, that's the only way to me that I would do it. If I'm the Rams, I do whatever I can to get a lead. I do whatever I can to get a lead, even if it means violating my statistical sort of axiom and getting the football first.
You're going for fourth down.
I want Dallas to trail, because their identity changes. Now they could do it better than they could before. Now that they've got Cooper, Gallup's no slouch. The emergence of this Jarwin as a legitimate receiving option at tight end, and Elliott himself in the pass game. But I want Dallas to not be who they are. And who they are is just gut punches with Elliott time after time after time, and then hitting something.
Rams-Cowboys prime time on Saturday night. That's going to be Buck and Aikman, in case you are curious. And that game is after the one we just broke down, which is Colts-Chiefs. That's an NBC telecast at 4:35. That's Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth. The closer the two games, according to Vegas, a 4.5-point spread for the Colts and the Chiefs. And again, this is a touchdown and an extra point here for Cowboys-Rams. Let's get to Sunday's matchups next. We start with maybe the game of the weekend, the Chargers and Phillip Rivers. Is it finally their time, or will Bill Belichick and Tom Brady find a way to do what they always do, and that's get to the conference championship game?
I mean, he's always laser-focused, but I mean, he knows. He's been around for so long, same with many other guys on the team, that if you lose, you're out. We've had that feeling before of losing and being out of it early, and you just know that feeling. So that laser focus is huge. And I mean, he's always laser focused, but I mean, definitely in the playoffs, I mean, you'll never catch him a time when he's not.
That there is Rob Gronkowski. He knows a thing or two about Tom Brady's demeanor in the playoffs. Wouldn't it be nice to just know at the beginning of every season, regardless of the ups and the downs and the undulations and the hills and the valleys of any given Sunday, and throwing a bad pick in a bad spot or losing a game you should have won, when the season ends, my team will be 11-5, we'll have a bye week, and we'll be getting ready for a round two playoff game at home.
They've had the world's longest preseason, right? September, October, November. We may win or lose a couple games. What Bill Belichick does every year is the most under, it's not talked about enough. I know they do it up there in New England, but they, besides Brady and a couple pieces here and there, they turn over the entire roster every 2 years. And Bill Belichick uses September and sometimes again October to figure out who can play. And they're even, you know, morph on the fly. It'll be a guy that you never thought would be someone that would be instrumental. It'll be Chris Hogan this year. For 6 weeks, it was Josh Gordon. For weeks in the past, it was, you know, Philip Dorsett. For guys in the past, it was some receiver that you never heard of. So I can't remember the guy's name. Like, I think last name of Mitchell, who was running huge routes for them. And now he's out of football.
Malcolm Mitchell.
Was that Malcolm Mitchell? It's incredible what they do. And it helps, obviously, to have one of the greatest of all time, a quarterback, but the greatest coach of all time, implementing that program and that system. It's remarkable. They're going to go, or they have a chance to, their eighth straight conference title game in an era of ultimate parity. Nothing is more impressive in sports. Nothing.
The Chargers are the better team.
Yeah.
They have the better record. They were 13-3 in the regular season. Matter of fact, I actually got that
12-4.
They're 12-4, and they're now 13-4 because they won last week against the Ravens. But they were a game better than New England was. It was 11-5. You can make the case they had a tougher schedule, by the way. While their division wasn't a juggernaut either, they had to deal with the Chiefs. The Patriots didn't have anybody to deal with. As they never do, by the way. They get the cakewalk that is the AFC East every single year. Spread is 4.5 points. You get 3 for being at home. So Vegas is telling you that New England's only 1.5 points better than the Chargers with all the conditions and all the expectations and everything you know about the history anyway. The total in this game is 47, which is the lowest of the weekend. I like that because I think this will be a little bit of a defensive struggle, and the Chargers are happy to play that way. Not to mention, the weather's supposed to be bad. Early on, they were calling for several inches of snow. Now it doesn't look like that's necessarily going to happen, but there's supposed to be some wind and some inclement weather. You mean to tell me the Chargers can't run the ball? That they just found a way to do it against the Ravens. They can't stop New England's running game. They just found a way, knowing Lamar Jackson, who is this unconquerable mission and task, was coming downhill at him 20 times, to slow down a running game no one could stop in the previous 6 weeks.
So I'm looking at Boston weather here for the next, 72 hours, and it looks like it's just chilly in the 20s.
Good.
Nothing terribly inclement in terms of that. So it might snow in Kansas City, but it doesn't look like it's going to snow in Boston. Just going to be cold. I think the Chargers will be fine with that. They have had this identity all season long of we're the extra team. Nobody wants us in L.A. Nobody gives a damn. We're playing at a soccer stadium in front of tens of people. We haven't had a single home game. We're flying back home between. The miles add up because we got to keep going east, play these 10 a.m. games. Doesn't matter. We'll kick your butt anyway. They have an identity, man.
I also don't get where the idea is coming from that the Patriots are a really good rushing team. Like, I keep hearing in all of the national stuff I'm watching and listening to, well, the Patriots, their running game's every bit as good or better than Baltimore's, and the Chargers might have a hard time if you have to run it and stop the run. The Chargers rank 17 spots higher in rushing yards per attempt than New England. The Patriots rank 29th in that category.
So, in general, yes. Think of those games that were Cordarrelle Patterson's taking snaps at tailback. They've had a rotating cast. When Sony Michel's there, their power running game is... I'm agreeing with you. I'm talking on both sides of my mouth.
Yeah, for much of the year, I will say this, they've been as high as sixth. I mean, they're in the top 10 in, like, major stretches of the season.
Yeah, they're not world beaters by any stretch, okay? But, so, James White's an okay running back. He's there to catch the passes. Same with Rex Burkhead. They had a couple games where, they're handing it off to tight ends and giving Cordarrelle Patterson pitches and things like that.
And you've got to account for there's always that week where they just decide on Monday.
Today's the day.
We're going to run it 50 times on Sunday, and then they go for 272 yards.
So Sony Michel, in the 8 games that he started, got his looks, got his carries, got his 15, 16 a game, come downhill. They ran some more power than you're used to seeing from a Patriots team. That was to kind of compensate for the fact that I think that Gronkowski is just not himself. That dude is put together with spit and Band-Aids and chewing gum at this point. They don't have the same weaponry that they've had in the past. There's no Randy Moss to bail you out. They don't have Brandon Cooks because they got rid of him, because they get rid of everybody no matter what before you have to pay someone. It's a different group right now. It's based on power running and quick passing. They don't have really much big playability.
Yeah, they don't scare me at all offensively in the sense of two plays, 75 yards, touchdown because they hit on something for 67. I don't really see that in their arsenal. Their best offensive player is Rob Gronkowski in terms of matchups.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't run away from anybody.
Not anymore.
That guy looks like he's held together with duct tape. And then the next guy maybe you would worry about is Julian Edelman, and he's running everything 7-8 yards from the line of scrimmage outside of Sony Michel. Here's my prediction on this game. I think this is a Melvin Gordon coming out party. Last week was about Melvin Ingram, and everyone in the country was talking about him on Monday. I think that's going to be Melvin Gordon this time around.
Mm.
To me, he gets 20 carries and goes for over 100. And he catches 6 or 7 balls, and he goes for over 60. I think it's a 24-21, 27-23 kind of game that the Chargers win. And I believe that Melvin Gordon is their MVP of the game. I think Phil Rivers ends up getting a lot of credit after the fact because he won the game, though. But I think it's a take what's given to you. Don't make mistakes. A lot like what he did against Baltimore, by the way. They only scored one touchdown in that game.
Nothing terribly impressive from Rivers in so much as big plays, but... He took care of it,
but
right?
But here's what's impressive.
Yeah.
For years, he tried to do too much, and he threw the pick that everyone killed him for after the fact. Yeah.
300,
when there wasn't enough help
three touchdowns,
around him.
Three picks, yeah.
He knows now he's got the help around him that he needs. He's got the defense. He's got the running game. He's got the special teams. He's got a good coaching staff. He doesn't need to try to do everything. He doesn't need to make the big mistake. But this is going to be a fun game. I know we both think it's the best game of the weekend.
I'm very much into it. I love this matchup. The Chargers are as good as anybody, the most complete team in the league. Whether or not they're the best, we'll see. They are really good at everything. There's nothing that they're bad at. The other part is it's the Brady Belichick in Foxborough thing where they just kind of win games. You could take all your best designs, figure out that, well, the Lawrence guy and Trey Flowers are not great players. That doesn't matter. It's New England, and they find a way to go to AFC title games, even with teams that aren't that great.
1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday for the Chargers and the Patriots. New England favored by 4.5. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. We've been starting to look at some mock drafts and look ahead to the NFL draft because the Redskins are going to be on the clock at number 15. One caught our attention this week. Dane Brugler of The Athletic has the Redskins taking Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray at number 15. We will ask him about that next on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.